Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Representative Garen Tarr out of Anchorage. Good morning, Garen, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice again. And I'm so glad that you could take the time to join us on Ag Matters Radio and catch us up on the various activities that have been going on. Garen, you've been on the show before, but it's been over a year, I think. So I'd love to start with a reminder to listeners about your connection to Alaska agriculture and your connection to Alaska in general. How'd you get here and why do we mention Garen's name when we talk about agriculture?
Well, thank you. I love talking about that. I'm actually celebrating my 20th anniversary of living in Alaska this summer.
Okay.
And came up here, typical story, looking for adventure and have a background in botany and actually focused on sustainable agriculture in my undergrad studies. So that has been something really important to me. When I first got here, I met River and Sarah Bean of Arctic Organic.
Right.
And got to know them a little bit. There was an effort to form the Alaska Organic Association at that time. We did before the federal government took that program over and then continued working with folks to help form the Anchorage Farmers Market, the one that's at the church at 15th and Cordova. And that started as the first market that required all Alaska-grown products.
Right.
And, of course, that was one of the early ones, and now it's so exciting to see how many there are today.
Right. I think that 2018 will have over 50 farmers markets across the state.
It's so exciting.
I know. It's awesome. Well, Garen, we're so glad to have you, and your passion for agriculture is, it just kind of resonates off of you. It's very obvious that you believe in local food and sustainability and all these topics that we're going to touch on. We've got lots of stuff to cover. I thought maybe we could start, if you want to give us kind of the high notes and high points, particularly related to agriculture legislation from the session this last couple of months.
Thank you. I would love to do that. We're celebrating passage of House Bill 217.
Yeah.
And this bill had quite a journey. It started out as food freedom and raw milk, and that's an effort I hope we'll talk a little bit more as we go through the show today, but had some hurdles with that, and we're going to keep working on that. But at the same time, we're able to identify a few areas where we could make some changes that would be positive for agriculture and positive for farmers. So House Bill 217 ended up having three parts to it. One is Department of Natural Resources has receipt authority now for marketing items for the Alaska Grown program. So not the sweatshirts and things that folks like to buy and just celebrate Alaska Grown, but the actual bags and twist ties that farmers might want to have. This will allow the department to buy them in bulk and then be able to distribute them at a price that farmers can afford, making that marketing effort even more successful because all of those items, whether they're in a grocery store or a farmer's market, can always have that Alaska Grown logo on it and be telling the story of why those are superior products. So that's really exciting, and there should be, based on the department's estimates, a few extra dollars that then they'll be able to reinvest in the Alaska Grown program. And you know, that's so successful, we want to do what we can to help support it.
Yeah, well, I just want to interrupt you real quick on that one, because as a former Division of Ag employee for 10 years, and I actually managed the Alaska Grown program for half of that time, it was a big frustration on our end that we never had receipt authority and that we couldn't do some of the things that other state departments of agriculture and other even departments and divisions within Alaska were able to do with their branded programming or their logoed items. And it's just such a critical component to supporting the industry. And it was one of those things where I always felt like I was kind of banging my head against a wall, looking up to my director and going, why can't we just get this done? Why can't we get this done? But it never rose to the top of the priority list. So although I'm not over there anymore, I know the staff over there has got to be really thrilled that you were able to make that part happen. And I just want to personally thank you for pushing that through and recognizing the importance in it and getting it done, because it really does matter and it will make the industry stronger, no doubt.
Well, that's exciting to hear because it's sometimes hard to sort of describe that piece of it, but you just gave this great explanation as to why that's so important, and coming from you, that means a lot. So thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks again. So that piece of it, that receipt authority, was a critical component, but what were the other two pieces of 217?
The second piece has to do with what's called the Alaska Product Preference Statute.
Right.
And some folks know about it, some folks don't, and hopefully more folks will as we continue working on it. This is something we started, back in 2014, and the existing statute says when state agencies are buying food, they can spend up to 7% more for Alaska-grown products.
Right.
Originally, we wanted to add 5% onto that and go to 12%. But as we worked on it, we realized we need more information. Let's actually look at some of the purchasing history. Let's get some of the information from the state department. So we requested an audit. We got that audit in the fall of 2015, and what we learned was that 12% probably wouldn't be sufficient to cover the cost difference between some of the Alaska-grown and outside products. But we also learned that a lot of farmers are not on the preferred vendor list,
right,
and that's one of the gaps in that, and that the contracts that were being put out didn't actually have any information so that a vendor would know that about this opportunity to look for an Alaska-grown product and that they could actually spend a little bit more.
Yeah.
So all of those pieces have been worked on in one form or fashion and continuing to try to get farmers onto the list with their known quantities and create more opportunities there. But what House Bill 217 does is it increases from 7% to 15% the allowable difference. And we're really excited about that. It's in there as a permissive thing rather than a requirement.
Okay.
And that means that it gives some flexibility for school districts and state agencies like the Department of Corrections as they're making their purchases. Now they have a little bit more price flexibility and can spend a little bit more if they can find those Alaska-grown products. And we always describe this like the anchor tenant of a mall, where
if
some farmers can have a reliable large contract, that will open up opportunities that allows them for growth potential, and then it takes a little bit pressure off of what they have to sell through CSAs or markets, which if it's a rainy Saturday, you might not have as many customers as that sunny day. So
right.
That is less predictable for farmers, and these contracts could build some stability and growth for farming operations, and that's the goal.
Yep, and I love that piece of it too. That's another component that I was very familiar with and have followed this, and I'm thrilled to see this part go through. The other thing, we don't want people to think that, oh, so this bill is going to encourage state agencies to spend more money. We don't want them spending more money. Why don't we want them to look for the best deal out there? But it's important that they are made aware of Alaska-grown products that are available that they could be using. It's important that those farmers are made aware of the opportunity for those contracts. I know another piece that we looked at, Garen, was that oftentimes when a state agency puts out a bid for a food contract, it's all one bid and it can't be broken up by commodity. Therefore, you know, a potato farmer in the valley can't supply the entire food bid for Department of Corrections. All they can supply is the potatoes. And it seems like through some of these discussions, they were going to find ways to break up those food contracts such that the folks with the Alaska grown products could at least, you know, make a shot at that portion of the contract, right?
Yes. And I do know through the procurement folks that not only has that happened, but they have added language to the RFP about the product preference statute so that people can look through vendors and know that they can, you know, have their bid come in a little bit higher, but it's okay because they're going with the Alaska-grown product.
Right.
And one of the things to think about, and I love that you brought that point up, because, of course, with the tight budgets and the pressure on school districts, that was something that was part of this discussion. But we try to give perspective. If you think any school district, like Anchor School District, that is feeding around 45,000 students, and at least lunch, if not the breakfast, depending on how the breakfast is provided, and oftentimes a snack, it's thousands and thousands and thousands and gets up into millions of meals served every year through all these different institutions. So you have to get in the mindset of the purchaser of that who is looking, you know, on a pretty regular basis at their meal plan and finding ways, okay, so maybe we could use the Alaska-grown potatoes, but then they would find a way to substitute something else in an upcoming meal, and that's how they would balance it out.
Right.
And so those folks are professionals. They know how to do it, and they'll be able to do it, and this will be a tool that they can use. And with the schools, one of the things that's come up is a lot of times the students are eating more of the meal when it's a fresh product that
Absolutely.
Has more flavor.
Yep.
And there's a benefit to that rather than a being thrown away, the nutritional value as well as the overall economics of that. In the end, if you're wasting less, then that could save money.
Exactly. And I love how you you brought up the anchor tenant concept of, you know, these contracts can be very important to farmers because they can do long-term budgeting and planning based around these contracts. The other thing that it does is as our larger commercial scale farmers gain access to these new contracts, that frees up space for some of the smaller scale farmers to maybe move up to mid-size and start selling products to grocery stores because the commercial guy has moved on to a bigger contract or spread some of his product around. So I always, you know, when people get critical about some of these topics and they say, well, you're only helping the big guy, I disagree. And I think that every time we help the big guy, it helps pull up the smaller guy a little bit farther along the way, right?
Right. And we need growth in all areas, right?
Absolutely.
We need the small, medium. And so hopefully this is an opportunity. And we know that there's farmers, and you would know this better than me, who have said, if they had the purchaser, they could grow more.
Absolutely.
But they need some more reliable kind of contract.
More stability in their marketing. Absolutely. All right. So that was win number two, another huge component of 217 that you get big props for and lots of credit for. Because, again, something we've been working on for a long time, and you got it done. Good job.
Thank you. That's really just wonderful to hear. It's kind of a dream for me because of my background, just getting this opportunity to work with folks and think that even though we're not changing things whole scale, but we're making some small changes that are going to be meaningful, that's really wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the third piece is related to farm touring. And this is really fun to me because this is something I was involved in as an undergraduate student in Ohio with taking folks out on farm tours. And it was something that I had wanted to work on when I first got to Alaska. Actually wrote a grant when I was working with the Alaska Organic Association to the Alaska Conservation Foundation, and I still have that grant denial, I will tell you, in my things I've saved. But it was for doing farm tours, and at the time, there just was not any interest, and it was such a disappointment because it's something that I think is so fun and just that people need that connection to where their food comes from and seeing how it's all done. And so this is just really fun for me to see that this is this emerging market and more farm weddings and parties and things like that. So really getting people out to the farm-to-table kind of economy. And there was just a need to make a tweak to some of the civil liability statutes so that if an individual is behaving recklessly while participating in a farm tour, the farmer is protected from that. Of course, if it was something that was the responsibility of the farmer themselves, their insurance, their property insurance would otherwise cover something. But just to give them that protection that someone can't behave recklessly and then they be held responsible.
Yeah, point the finger at the farmer. Another just kind of win that something that needed to happen has needed to happen for quite some time and you got it done. So I know that there's a lot of people out there that have been curious about offering farm tours on their place and considered it, but it's a big risk to invite people onto your farm. Most of our farmers live on their farm. If something were to go bad, they are at risk of losing not just their livelihood, but their home. So another win. And just kind of a checkbox that's been marked off now as, hey, we got that done. Good job.
Well, thank you. And for folks listening, it's great to kind of use this as an example of how legislation can change because it started out with the food freedom and the raw milk and the product procurement preference was added from another bill. We thought, let's do one bill. And then as we had some challenges with the other parts evolved and we were able to add in these other components that came at suggestion of farmers and the Farm Bureau. So it's fun to work with everyone. And one of the things I've noticed is sometimes the reaction to a proposal when it comes out can be, well, is this a good idea, bad idea? But really, there's so much opportunity for input and for something to evolve. I think this is just one of those examples that people can look to and say, okay, you know, we can see where there were some challenges, and but otherwise, you know, we were able to find some things that were good. And another success story out of the bill is a component of the sort of food freedom is expanding the opportunity for online sales.
Right.
And this is being done through the food hubs.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't end up with that provision in the bill, but what did happen as a result is Department of Environmental Conservation is doing a pilot program. And so we've got the folks working with them so they can be doing their food hub legally through this pilot program. And then I expect it will be successful, and that'll be a next piece to come back and make more permanent through policy. But that was exciting. The department, I would say, kind of came together and met us halfway, because the kind of hang-up was that with these sales, a consumer under the cottage food or food freedom kind of model is supposed to know the producer.
Yeah.
They're supposed to have that interaction. And once that moves to an online platform, that relationship is a little bit changed.
Yep.
But they still have the opportunity to go meet that person. So that's not eliminated. And with as big a state as Alaska is, and with some of the specialty crops and value-added products that people are doing, it makes sense. We're buying a lot of things online. We're getting our transportation online. We do our banking online.
Yeah.
That we would, you know, sort of modernize and make sure that that opportunity exists. And then, you know, one of the things we hear sometimes is people don't like to go to farmers markets because they don't know that every item they need is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But by farmers coming together and working together in these food hubs, you can really eliminate that by having somebody who's doing vegetables, somebody's got honey, somebody's got eggs, and that way all of a sudden you can put together the whole grocery list for someone, and that level of convenience makes it more likely that people will participate and buy those products.
Yeah, it's opening doors for a whole new demographic of people who will not take the time to go to the farmer's market on Saturday, but they will, you know, click and buy and then build their box and, you know, stop by and pick it up. Before we jump into the next segment, Garen, I just want to remind listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the telephone this morning is Representative Garen Tarr out of Anchorage. We just have been covering all the successes out of this last legislative session down in Juneau. And I want to say, you know, give you credit one more time for kind of being the champion for agriculture in Juneau this session. And, you know, like you said, this House Bill 217 started out as one thing, and it certainly morphed along the way, but it led to so many really critical and good discussions about agriculture. And I think the tempo and the mood surrounding agriculture in Juneau has really changed in the last decade. And we're so grateful that you're down there, you know, leading the charge and reminding folks about all the positive stories and all the positive changes happening in agriculture in Alaska.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this a little bit more, because you led the charge so much in these agricultural discussions. There's also been a new subcommittee formed out of the session this year, right?
Yes, we have formed a food security subcommittee. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But we wanted to have that sort of broad title because as we kicked it off yesterday, we had speakers who talked about it from the access to ag lands, access to facilities perspective, talked about it from the food supply perspective, also talked about it from the hunger perspective and the lack of access to healthy food, the poverty perspective. So that big umbrella gives us an opportunity to kind of pick at any one of those pieces that we want to talk about as we move forward.
Yeah, which is exactly, I mean, I'm thrilled that there's a subcommittee kind of focused on this and taking the lead. And it's these types of discussions that, you know, like you mentioned, it was 2015 when we first started talking about the product preference program at the legislative level. And, you know, it took till the 2018 session to get it done, but now it's done. And so who knows what kind of discussions in this subcommittee will, you know, what they'll start and where we'll be in 3 years, what sort of legislation we'll be passing and more successes to talk about, right?
Right. And yesterday's discussion was fascinating, I thought, and maybe because I'm a ag enthusiast, but I hope others did too. I was thrilled at the participation, middle of the day, summer meeting, so wasn't sure what we would get, but we wanted to do this first one at our regular resources committee time. And we had most of the committee participate, Representatives Rauscher, Tellerico, Birch, Drummond, Parrish. So we had from Juneau to Healy, represented in participation, which was great. And then on the phone, we had people from Delta Junction. We had people from the Valley. We had people from, you know, Anchorage area. We had a lot of good coverage for in terms of, you know, people listening in. And so yesterday's topic was really kind of introduction to food security and all those different frameworks, including, I should mention, traditional foods and cultural tourism is another item that's come up. But then we transitioned into more specifics about milk and milk production. And I had the opportunity to talk with a farmer earlier in the day, and it really was such a perfect conversation to frame the discussion for the afternoon, because he was telling me numbers from the early 1900s of the number of dairies that we had in Alaska, and it was 50 in the Mat-Su Valley. There were two in Nome. There was one in McGrath. There were dairies on Kodiak. There was Juneau, Anchorage area. So it's not that we haven't had dairy farms or dairy operations in the past.
Right.
It's that we've lost them. And then Amy Seitz presented, and she was showing some numbers from the 80s where there were more around 30. And then, of course, now where we are with just one.
Right.
And so just talking about what are some of the reasons that that may have happened and what are some of the other states doing. And we were lucky to be joined by a gentleman named Pete Kennedy, who's an attorney who's been working in raw milk. It's his specialty, which that's got to be a fairly unique interest area for an attorney. But
sure.
He's been working. And so he was just giving dozens of examples. And now we're starting to look into more specifics of other states and where they've allowed things that we're not allowing. So, for example, one of the things I'm really interested in after this discussion is allowable of value-added products so that people could make cheese and yogurt, for example, from their raw milk. And it sounded like from some of the farmers we talked to, that could be a big opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, a new door opened. He talked about delivery services, that some of them, instead of, you know, requiring someone to come on the farm, there's allow for delivery services. Want to understand a little bit more how that's working in Alaska. There's also, you know, full-scale retail. Some of the folks have totally deregulated things. He talked about some of the states that have passed food freedom, more like what we wanted to do beyond just what's allowed right now through regulation, which is the more traditional cottage foods like the baked goods, jams and jellies and salsa.
Yeah.
You know, once we wanted to talk about, you know, canned vegetables. And for me, the really interesting thing is we know that this is going on every day, that someone is making something from their garden, canning it, and giving it to their neighbor or their family member. And it's happening successfully every single day without problem.
Sure.
But once you want to make it a retail opportunity, it, you know, of course, it changes the regulatory dynamic. And I'm convinced there are ways we can do this and expand opportunities and still address food safety.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're leading the charge on this and helping the powers that be and the producers, et cetera, be, you know, have these discussions, because we need to talk about it. It's a hot topic, particularly raw milk. You know, again, having been an employee at the Division of Ag for 10 years, I've seen this from all sorts of sides. But I also, like you said, you know, it's happening and we got to talk about it. And we got to talk about the best way to move forward for Alaska and for growth in our industry, because people want these products. We've got incredible producers that want to serve and sell and prepare these products. So what can we do to bridge that gap in between? So, Garen, for listeners' sense, if a person wants to get involved in this subcommittee, the next discussion, or read minutes or notes taken at the meeting this week, how does somebody get involved?
Well, they could just call our office, 269-0144. That's 269-0144. And give us their contact information. We'd be happy to put them on an email list, or we can do Facebook announcements, but the email list is the main way we're trying to keep the core group together of people who are interested and we know want that level of communication, meeting minutes, handouts, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it would be best if they gave us a call or just sent me an email at rep.garan, G-E-R-A-N, .tar, T as in Tom, A-R-R, @akleg.gov. So call or an email would be perfect. And then when you go to the legislative website, which is akledge.gov, and go to the different committees, the Resources Committee, all of the documents will be uploaded there.
Okay, great.
And they're just found by date. And so you can just go to the date of that meeting and then be able to get any of the documents. And we'll try to have all of that online, anything that we're using or have prepared. So, for example, from the meeting yesterday, some really great documents. Susie Crosby of one of, I'll just say, one of the local farmers, she gave us a presentation on how her herd share program is working that was great, had some great photos in it. And then we had some of the documents from Department of Environmental Conservation. So that's always helpful to see how they're educating consumers and Alaskans. And then we had presentation on food security from the Farm Bureau that I think people would be interested in. One of the great slides in their presentation talks about their idea of food security is to have a 90-day supply on hand and know where that would come from.
Wow.
And they look at what we have today, and then they tell you in the other column what it would take to fill the 90-day supply. And just taking milk, for example, we're producing about 3 million pounds of milk, and it says we would need 28 to meet that 90-day supply. So that in itself just tells you there's so much opportunity in this particular component of agriculture that we really should be thinking about how do we make things work a little bit better, and is there a way for the state to remove a regulatory burden, open up a new opportunity, and give folks, it's that same kind of struggle with the vegetable farmers, from going from sort of the market level farmer to medium size to a larger scale operation. And just seems the middle pieces are where people are really struggling, and how can we create some more opportunity there?
Yeah, create more opportunity and reduce barriers. I think it's great that you guys are having these discussions, and I'm glad so many people are engaged and involved. Garen, when is the next subcommittee meeting going to be held?
Well, the next item we're going to do, I believe, is the weekend of July 13th, and we're headed to Delta Junction to do some farm tours.
Okay.
And Representative George Rauscher is taking the lead on that. Very excited about him offering to coordinate and make sure we get out to visit some folks. And what I'd like to do is find a way to have a town hall meeting while we're there.
Okay.
That way it's maybe in the evening, which might be a more convenient time for folks. And if we set it up now, we'll have several weeks to advertise it.
Sure.
So that's I hope, the next event. And then what came out of this, I decided to post online on a Facebook chat group about Alaska Farm and Food, I think is the name. And it was great. There were dozens and dozens of comments. And the suggestion was doing another town hall type meeting out in Palmer area, maybe on a weekend. And I really would like to do that, want to coordinate that with the Valley representatives that want to participate, and hopefully could share some of that information with you to make sure when you have a chance you can share it more broadly. So we want to do at least a couple more of these town hall type meetings, and then we'll try to schedule some other follow-up discussion meetings once we've gathered more information.
Perfect. I love it. And I'm again so excited that you know, that you and other members of the legislature are continuing to lead this charge in increasing awareness about agriculture and reducing barriers and talking about opportunities, because it just feels like it's been a while since agriculture was being talked about so positively, and I'm glad it's happening again. Garen, I hate to tell you, but our half an hour is almost up. We are just about out of time. So is there any kind of final closing thoughts that you want to throw us before our session on Ag Matters ends this morning?
Just thank you again for having me and giving me a chance to talk with you about these items. It is a passion of mine, and truly one of the most exciting things I get to do is work with farmers. And so I just want them to know that we're listening. We're not going to move forward on a proposal that's not supported by farmers. And so each step, that input is so valuable and critical. I hope to hear from folks, and can't wait to meet folks as we visit places this summer.
Okay.
Thanks, Amy.
Great. Thanks so much. And if listeners are interested, it's that House Resources Subcommittee, and we'll post some links when we get the recording of the show online. We'll post some links for where people can go to find more. And thanks so much, Representative Tarr, for your leadership on this issue and for joining me this morning on Ag Matters Radio.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.